Kanga Audio.
A quick thanks before we start the show. Filmmaking Confidential, the book, is getting rave reviews from readers, filmmakers, film professors, and even people in creative fields other than filmmaking. I just want to say thank you to all of you who ordered it and for your support. If you haven't yet picked it up and you want to learn more filmmaking secrets, Filmmaking Confidential is for you. It's available wherever books are sold in most countries around the world. Order it by visiting Audible or Amazon. To find out more, check out filmmakingconfidential.com and stevebalderson.com, and thank you. I'm Steve Balderson, and you're listening to the Filmmaking Confidential podcast. Each week, we meet with filmmakers, writers, actors, artists, and other notables. Many episodes include questions or commentary from other filmmakers listening to the conversation. Today's guest is Elizabeth Speer, an award-winning filmmaker from Austin, Texas. Elizabeth earned her MA in Media and Communication from European Graduate School in Switzerland and has studied under Terrence Malick, Wim Wenders, and DJ Spooky. Her films have screened all over the world, including France, Germany, Norway, Egypt, Ireland, and the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City. Elizabeth and I discuss the sometimes insane behavior and on-set antics of other directors, prima donnas, and egomaniacs, and how to have a creative, warm, and welcoming film set.
There are moments when there is a threatening situation, or where there's someone who's really acting out, or it's an unsafe behavior, or something like that. I think it's always better to get through any of it with humor. Solve the problem, solve the situation. As we know, there is no such thing as a problem. There's only your reaction to what other people consider a problem. But if you can, dissolve the situation and then immediately go into humor, then I found that usually works. Do you have another sort of like strategy that you would use in a situation where there was like something going on that was either tense, uncomfortable, challenging? Would you use something else other than humor?
Taking a break, like just, coming up with some, especially to diffuse tension or offer some sort of, distraction. But sometimes the tension is, there have been a couple of times where there was either screaming or vulgar language, the first time it happened, I remember I was really afraid. I mean, it was the first time that I had done a few like really, really tiny bootstrapped independent films, and this was the first production that was kind of out of my control in a lot of ways. And it was apparently there was a situation brewing that I wasn't aware of. I was kind of like in my director's tunnel, and one of the actors was getting increasingly unhappy. And then it was like 0 to 100. All of a sudden there was yelling and I had no idea. But that yelling and screaming was definitely directed at me. And that was just shocking. It was, and in a way it felt a little traumatic, because the stakes are so high, on set, the pressure is just immense. And I already knew that this production was beyond something that I could just do by myself. This was beyond anything that I had ever tried to attempt to do before. It felt threatening and scary, and it eventually, worked itself out. Part of me, I really had to turn on the, okay, this person's yelling, but what is it that they're really saying? Like what is it, what's not being met, that I wasn't aware of, and how can we make sure that need is met, in the future. And we just moved on. I think that person just needed, was also feeling very tense and just needed to vent. And sometimes not just actors, but sometimes people don't feel like they can kind of take care of themselves, or maybe they don't feel heard. I mean, there are a lot of there, you know, each person is just like, including myself, a cog in a wheel, you know, like we're all just, you know, kind of, and sometimes we get in our tunnels, you know, my tunnel of directing and the cinematographer's tunnel of, you know, lighting and, you know, framing and things like that. So how did I deal with it? It was just, yeah, to figure out what they really needed, and we moved on, and it was fine. And then the other one was, yeah, just another outburst. You know, I think just sometimes people have emotional outbursts on set, and I dealt with that after we had, you know, called that's a wrap for the day, and took that person aside, just and that, you know, that person apologized and everything was fine. So that in that sense, I was able to give it time that second time. So
cool. I had an experience on my second movie with Karen Black. And now that she's dead, I can tell it. it was fine, though. It ended up really great. But what I found interesting was, and my father told me this, so I wasn't there when it happened, but he told me about it. And what he did was, I thought was really cool. So she was having a freak out about something she needed, just like what you mentioned. But no one knew. You know, my father was smart enough to say, okay, well, what was it that she really wanted? Mm. You know, she's freaking out about this thing, but that's not really the case. And she was yelling verbally, like the level of volume. And he looked at her and in the same tone of volume said, stop talking to me that way. And then he's calmed down in his voice and said, Karen, I am here to help you. I am here to help you get whatever it is you want. But I don't react very well when I am being yelled at. So if you need something, you just come up to me and tell me what it is, and I'll try to do that for you. If I can get it for you,
you know,
if I can help you, I'll do it.
Yeah.
But you just got to treat me like a human being.
Yeah.
And she looked at him deadpan and said, no one's ever just said that to me before. And then she was fine the whole time. Like, that was it. It was just like that first sort of like, and a lot of times actors are primarily the ones that act out in these ways. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's because probably I would imagine that it is because they're being so vulnerable that they're already in a state where they need to feel safe. Mm-hmm. And if they don't have their green tea with pomegranate side juice, they're going to let you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
That may or may not bring them their security that they need to feel safe enough to be vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
But I often think that sometimes a lot of it is just, it can be dealt with in conversation prior. I mean, you know, before you even get to set, ask, what do you need to feel safe?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's some crazy green juice with pomegranate something, like, you just, okay, go and get it. It's no big deal. Now, if it's something you can't do or if it's out of your realm, well, I need to have the National Guard. Or I need to, well, okay, we don't get the National Guard today.
Yeah. I remain so calm in some extraordinary circumstances and your film wisdom. But that chapter in particular of, like, how to deal with not difficult people, but difficult scenarios on set, you know, when there's so much pressure, there's money and time. And I mean, everybody needs to be happy because everyone needs to keep working, you know, because I mean, you could get all the way like close to the end of production. And if your lead actor freaks out, how do you keep everybody on the train, you know?
Well, 36 hours left to go and your leading actress has decided to either hold your movie hostage or quit. You've almost finished filming. You have like two scenes left, right?
Yeah.
My first instinct immediately went to, can I edit the story together with what we have? Mm. How important are these two scenes that are left? Like, I figured it out. I was like, I totally could. And I was prepared to just pack it up and go. And then I said, okay, well, now that I know that that can happen, let's look at another option, you know? And then The other option was, let's have a discussion and resolve it. You know, again, the bottom line is, what's really the core cause? You know, the core cause isn't dissatisfaction, because we've been working together for 6 weeks already. You know, so it's like, you know, so what is it really that's going on? And then we had that discussion, and she was totally, at first, really, really sort of like, there was a wall. And then by the end of it, totally fine. And she stayed and she did the scenes.
I think that, like, so much of having a successful film shoot and like having everybody happy just mirrors everyday life in so many ways. I mean, if you're good with people, then you can, you know, kind of handle your film. But I mean, a lot of people aren't good with people, you know? So what do you think it takes? What do you think a director needs to have to be successful? If you're not good with people, you can just animate the people, right? I mean, what would you say, what kind of personality or wherewithal do you need to have as director?
Well, here's what I would use. And this also goes for what I was going to bring up about the assistant directors. Do you have your phone on your table there next to you? Can I see it?
Hmm.
Okay. Now, what if I had said, could you show me your goddamn phone? You might show me, but you don't really want to.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like, if the objective is to get the makeup artist to hurry up, yelling at her to hurry up isn't going to make her hurry up.
Mm-hmm.
But if you walk up to her and say, hey, what can I do to help you get finished in the next 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Then she'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Or she'll say, no, don't worry about it, I'll be done in 5 minutes.
So do you feel like you were born with that trait? And again, you talk about your dad. I know he's great with people. So did you just see that modeled, or is this something that you've developed, or is this something that people can change about themselves? I'm really asking for myself here.
I think it is something that you can change. Now, when I use it in the expression about the ADs and assistant directors who are kind of rude all the time, the first movie I did, the AD was just ruthless. She was a total just hurricane. She was like a Tasmanian devil tornado. She was just, no one liked her. She would say, let's do this and hurry up or do that. And she just lost faith. I mean, everybody lost faith in her. Like, they just didn't take her seriously. And at one point I did sort of the example of what we were just talking about with the phone.
Mm.
And she said that she was taught in school that an assistant director behaved that way, and that's what it was meant for the job. And when I said, well, here, you're not being very effective and you're not doing a very good job, she was actually upset, because she wanted to do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And she thought in order to do a good job, she had to yell. And when I said that you didn't need to do that anymore, she actually was like, really? She was like, cool. And then she didn't yell anymore, and everybody was fine. And so sometimes I think it's just knowing that you don't need to do that, mm-hmm, necessarily. Now, if it's your own personal behavior, like if it's, let's say, you lose your patience with an actor or a DP, or you yourself have a reaction, then that's negative, and that maybe you yourself as a director, you know, yell at somebody, I would say, first, sometimes it's really, really difficult, especially when you're under that much pressure,
mm-hmm,
to keep everything sort of balanced. I mean, I know that if the human mind can process between 8 and 10 things or 8 and 12 things at a time, once you start reaching 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 things at a time, that's what creates overwhelm. And when you're overwhelmed, you can't think rationally, because there's way too many things.
Mm-hmm.
So my advice to that is practice before you get on the film set of, you know, trying to get rid of the things that are not the top 12 priority. Mm. And that could be, you know, when I'm on a film set and I'm dealing with all of these egos and all of these challenges and all of these situations, I do not need to be thinking about how am I going to pay the phone bill or how am I going to deal with my partner over dinner.
Yeah.
Right. I really need to focus on this right now.
Yeah.
Because there will be time later mm-hmm. that I can do a whole set of other things.
Yeah. Like from script to screen, I mean, last years and a lot of it can last, not usually in your films, but I mean, what is the average? Like 2 years or something. And yeah. It's that a lot of life happens within 2 years. And I had a particularly difficult year personally, the same year that I had 4 film shoots scheduled. And so I had to go from set to set to set and just completely compartmentalize, put the other thing on hold. It was kind of insane that I mostly successfully did that.
You know what? Mm-hmm. You totally did, because that wasn't too long after we met. Mm-hmm. And we even worked together on a project and I forgot about it entirely.
So, yeah, I think there was one day where I had to take I think I just took a little time off because it was my birthday. So I took a half day off or something like that. But that was really nice to co-direct and share those responsibilities. And I think actually a time or two I had to go and take a walk just so when I was letting things creep into my mind, or maybe I was having to deal with stuff on the phone. And I remember just how nice it was that it's fine. I can leave for half a day. So.
Yeah, totally. And you know what? I wasn't planning on talking about co-directing, mm-hmm. but since you brought it up, we should, because since then I've been asked twice if I would ever consider that. And I said, oh, I've done it before. Mm-hmm. And the person I was talking to said that they knew of a story where there were co-directors and it went terribly. Mm. And their egos were just like this the whole time, and they just fought, and the set life was miserable, and the film ended up being just so-so. And they thought that maybe you couldn't do it because it might not be possible to make it enjoyable, but yet somehow we did it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was clear leadership. I mean, and I've got to say, I'm okay. I'm okay as long as I know who's in charge. And you definitely took the lead. We discussed this. We had a lot of communication about it in the beginning. I knew that there was a lot I wanted to learn from you because I think I was coming off a difficult film shoot, and I had heard that your film shoots pretty much ran like clockwork, that everything was organized, and you had a lot of experience and knowledge that I kind of just considered myself, even though we were co-directors, and I did feel that way creatively. You listened to all of my ideas, but at the end of the, I knew that I decided at the end of the day, we would go with your idea, but you never even made me feel like, no, your idea is not good, or we don't have time. Well, actually you did a couple of times say, well, we don't have time to shoot it that way. And maybe that was your kind of nice way to say I hate that idea, but I wasn't gonna put up a fight or it wasn't my ego that showed up on that film set. You know, it was really me wanting to just learn everything I could and go with the flow. And so I think that's probably why it worked. If this were if it were my baby, I would want the other co-director to kind of do what I did, which is, you know, take a side seat. And
remember we also said, like, hypothetically, if there's 10 responsibilities that a director does, which 5 do you want and which 5 do I want? Mm-hmm. And then we just sort of divvied up the responsibilities so that we shared them.
Yeah.
And we really didn't have much mesh overlap. I mean, we did storyboards together. Mm-hmm. We co-wrote it. So then there was also, all of a lot of decisions were made before we ever got to the set.
Yeah.
Filmmaker Elizabeth Speer. Another great guest familiar with working under pressure is Amanda Dibert.
The ISIS attacks that happened in Paris, and President Hollande was supposed to be coming from the soccer match that he was at when they struck to our set. We're also at the base of the Eiffel Tower. We have people from the Obama administration with us. We have the mayors of Paris, and we have former Vice President Gore. We have dignitaries, we have celebrities, and we're like concerned that we might be a target.
You can get a link to my full interview with Amanda Dibert at filmmakingconfidential.com or by subscribing for free to this podcast. When we come back, Elizabeth will talk about one of her first experiences as an assistant director, friendships, and film crew hookups. Plus, we'll take questions from the audience listening to our conversation right after this. I'm Steve Balderson, and this is the Filmmaking Confidential podcast. I'm back with Elizabeth Speer.
Actually, my AD story comes from when I was an AD for a big shoot in Los Angeles, and I had been an AD on a set in Austin, but it was years before, and it was low budget, and I thought, okay, I'm really good at keeping a schedule, and I know, like, I'm very good at economizing and solving problems and all this stuff, and I thought, this is great, I'm going to bring all of that knowledge and structure to that film set. And when I got there, I think, like, the director, you know, I was trying to tell her or kind of rein her in, which is my job, but she really didn't want to hear what I had to say. And then then I started getting some like revolt with the camera crew, because they were mad at me for like, and so I don't know if I was like too nice or, but I just thought, oh my gosh, this is horrible, because I'm in the middle, you know, like I wanted to say, hey, I don't give an F about this film. You know what I mean? I'm trying to like get it done on time. I'm trying to like, you know, keep everybody happy. But for me, that just felt like a nightmare of like trying to keep all these different groups on the same team. So I would say I would never want to do that again. I walked off that set thinking, this is miserable. This is my worst nightmare.
my favorite AD. Well, aside from you that I had for a few days.
That's right.
I mean, sorry. I've had some great ADs, but my favorite, funniest one was this guy who I'm certain was not high when we were on set, but talked and acted. His whole behavior was as if he was the most stoned person in the entire world. So he would show up in the morning, he'd be like, hey, everybody, can we be ready in about 10 minutes? And we're like, okay. You know, and then he'd be like, hey, are you ready yet? You know, like, yeah, he'd go to the makeup chair and he'd be like, you need to be done in about 5 minutes. And it was like really soft spoken and really like, it was so the opposite of what I was describing, you know, most ADs, but it was hilarious and it ran smoothly and he was fine. It was just, I had never had that sort of like other end of the spectrum experience before.
Yeah.
Have you ever worked on a project that has had a situation where there was like a producer or somebody in charge, whether it was the financer or a production company, a creative producer, somebody who was the person where the buck stopped there, that has come in and almost sabotaged it or made it really terrible or just really even more challenging than it would have been already?
Not anything that extreme, but I have a friend that had something that extreme, and it was actually for a studio, and the director was, I believe when the project started, it was a documentary, so it went on for years. When it started, I think she was married to this person, and through the course of it, this is kind of loose. I think they got a divorce. And so that, and he definitely tried to sabotage the whole thing, and kind of like, you know, the producer is, you know, needs to kind of support the director. And initially his role was to stand up for her to the studio, you know, and then when the divorce happened, that was a personal issue. And so all of a sudden he became like on the opposite side and almost wrecked the whole thing. But I saw the movie. It's great. I won't tell you what it is, but it worked out. Yeah. So that would be that. I can imagine that would be a nightmare scenario.
Yeah, my
break with someone.
Yeah. My film instructor, Eric Sherman, who was my mentor Yoda for, you know, all my life. Mm-hmm. His father was Vincent Sherman, one of the last golden age directors. And he had had an affair with almost every one of his leading ladies. Mm-hmm. And in one of them in particular, it was Betty Davis. And somewhere halfway through the movie, they broke up, or he ended the affair. And he said that from that point forward, she would not take his direction. Mm. The performance, you could just see changes in the middle of the movie.
Wow.
And so his advice was to never sleep with your actors because it's just a problem from the beginning.
Yeah.
He actually told us this in film school. Like, he's like, today we're going to talk about don't have sex with your actors.
Yeah. Or actually anyone on the crew until after you wrap.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, and what's so interesting, I'm so stupid because it's whether or not I grew up in Kansas or mm-hmm. I just was oblivious to it. But I didn't realize until my third or fourth movie that the crew always hooks up. Like, there is like this weird web of activity going on that I never knew was going on. And I wasn't even paying attention to it until at some point they're like, yeah, didn't you know? And I'm like, what? You know, like, but I'm a little slow in that regard.
Yeah. I was supposed to, because the first few films I did, I was married. And so it wasn't until, you know, I wasn't married that I was like, oh my gosh, like what is going on here? But luckily I don't like any outside drama in, you know, in the film world. I'm keeping the drama on the screen, right?
So. Totally. And you're right. It does affect it. It does impact it. There was a makeup artist who I think was servicing one of my leading actors one time. And he was a famous guy.
Uh-huh.
And she was a great makeup artist. But the problem was let's say it's the day where he either wouldn't get with her, or maybe she wanted it to be more sincere. She wanted more of it. She wanted more of a relationship or something. And she's obviously not going to get that. So then her emotions are hurt. And then she goes to work and she's cranky. She doesn't want to be there, you know, and it's affecting everybody else around just because of this sort of interpersonal drama that's going on.
It also makes people feel weird, I think, to okay, so I had this moment. We were shooting out of the country, and this is another kind of, I had gotten some bad news, and one of the people on set happened to be a dear, actually a few of them were, but was a dear friend of mine. And he was giving me like a really long hug, you know, and I was kind of crying, and it wasn't sexual at all, you know, but then like two other important crew members walked in, and I just felt so awkward. And I was like, okay, now it looks like I'm having a relationship with someone. And like, and I had to go, and then I had to go tell the other people my personal business, like, I'm sorry, I told my friend this, and now he was giving me a hug. It just felt really weird, and I think it was fine, but I don't know if it ever left their minds that like there might be something between me and that person. And then a little bit later there may have seemed to be some like in my head, like, does it seem like I'm giving this person more attention? Does that make sense? Because, and yeah. I got, nothing had happened, but I kind of got, you know, screwed up in the head a little bit because I was reading, I don't know if I was reading into their reactions or not, but just, yeah, I my rule is completely leave that alone. Yeah. Until afterwards, if there's like some relationship that you want to go after the film's over, fine, but it can wait.
Yeah. I was in a really long relationship too. So I never engaged in any on-set activities, although there was an instance that I did with somebody who had been in a movie years later, which was a terrible experience. Anyway.
If we were making rules, one would be keep intimate relationships off after the film is over.
Totally. And I almost think that, like, I don't know, once you have created some, what's so interesting is that you might have a spark for someone. You might be attracted to them before working together. But my hunch is, in my case anyway, it may be different for everybody else, but in my case, that attraction and that energy that I'm actually feeling is that the part of them that's going to deliver the part of the thing that came from inside me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And once they've done that, honestly,
yeah,
it's like they're not sexually stimulating at all. Yeah. Right? Or you get to know them because, of course, you're around them every day for weeks and weeks and weeks. That by about the second or third week, you don't even know what you were thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is hard. Do you feel like it's hard? Well, it is hard to be around the same people day after day after day, especially if you're shooting on location and you have your kind of social hour after set with the people that you've spent all day on. So even aside from like physical intimate relationships, how would you talk about just like friendships or taking a break so that there's not friction, undue friction from just getting on each other's nerves and just like being the only ones around in some remote location? How would you say to balance that?
I am a huge fan of that. When I was directing Casserole Club, we all stayed in vacation rental homes in Palm Springs, which is the locations that we were filming in. And there, you know, it was a 15, 18 person cast and crew. And everybody stayed in these houses that were sort of like in this big sort of a compound. And we would sleep there every night. And then we'd go out into the living room and dining rooms to film every day. And I thought, okay, this was the first time it sort of happened. So after we would work that day, we'd all make dinner with each other. And I noticed that in the process, if there were any conflicts during the day, they kind of solved themselves by the act of creating something else together. Like, we're going to make dinner now. Hey, can you pass the pasta? Or hey, can you stir the sauce? Or hey, do you have the chopped mushrooms? Or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And of course, if people are drinking or, you know, having smokes or something, they're already sort of like calming down. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of fun and it becomes sort of like summer camp. Mm-hmm. And people sometimes, you know, share things and it never turned ugly. I mean, obviously, sometimes if people are, you know, doing any kind of substance, that sometimes can turn ugly. Mm-hmm. But it seemed to be really lovely. And so then after that, I've always engaged the idea of, okay, at the end of the day, if I can't or don't want to have a conversation or a meal or a drink or a glass of water with this person, then I probably shouldn't hire them. Mm-hmm. And so I've tried to make it a mental sense when I'm thinking about who am I going to work with on this project. That becomes almost more important. You know, if the bond at the end of the day is as strong as it can be, then it actually makes the work that you're doing even better.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
I really don't have any questions. I just love listening to you guys and, you know, learning from all your stories and You know, because I'm trying to be a filmmaker one day too, so I don't have any stories or anything yet.
You'll have plenty. One of these days.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I had some technical issues, but okay. I heard pretty much everything you guys said. I did have, it's more like advice though, like getting advice from you guys of, I would say like mistakes you made, like things you would say, don't ever do this, watch out for this, like some, like the most important things that we could take away from that.
Well, do you have any sort of like, give me sort of a ballpark of like any particular area?
Or in the set shooting itself?
Yes, in the shooting itself, going into it, you know, dealing with different personalities. I know you guys have kind of touched on that mm-hmm. already, you know, but sometimes over time, after you've been doing it, then you tend to develop a strategy that works for you. And you know, so just things that you keep in mind, things you avoid, you know, does that make sense?
Yeah. It does.
And I can start, Steve.
Yeah, please.
I think that to be a good director, and when I say a good director, what I mean is kind of like to be a good person, to be a good, I would want, and I know that I haven't succeeded in this always, and it's made me take some breaks, from shooting at time, but to make sure that you're not coming in with your own baggage, that you deal with your own, you know, issues offset, as we've kind of talked about, and that when you show up, you're vulnerable, you're positive, like that you and that people can walk away saying, that was one of the best experiences of my life, and I want to be, you know, friends with that director, friends with that crew and those actors for the rest of my life, that they come away feeling like they're on a team. And so that does mean avoid completely going, navigating how to be in the tunnel and the flow of creativity. And that is like a very narrow vision in some sense, but that you are not treating people like objects, and that you are treating people like human beings that are showing up to work for your vision, and with that amount of appreciation. And if that can just be like where your source is, where you're grounded, you know, maybe it's taking times, multiple times a day or the beginning of the day to kind of get, let that be the place from whence you start, from, you know, does that make sense? And then hopefully that will just flow out of you through the production. But it is hard. And then to know like when you've made a mistake, when you've you've been rude or short or selfish or whatever it is, to make it right. And that's just a hard, for me anyway, like I don't have just the straight gift like Steve does, who I've just seen masterfully handle situations, and because he's handling himself, like Steve handles himself, and then therefore like everyone else is feels, I think a lot of people feel like blessed to work with him, and I'm sure there are personalities that you don't get along with, Steve, but you can't please everyone, I know that, but it's I've just learned a lot from just like handle yourself, and then you can be nice to people.
That's a really good piece of advice, is to just treat people nicely. I mean, come at it with kindness and compassion, and it's gonna be great.
Yeah,
no matter what.
Yeah.
The thing that I was gonna say was the one big piece of advice is to always be honest. And if, for instance, you're nervous that maybe if you told someone the truth that they would quit, then you better just tell them. Because if they do quit, then you've got a chance to replace them. But if you keep that inside and you don't tell them that this is coming up, and then this comes up and you're in the middle of it and they want to quit, it's too late. Mm-hmm. You know, then it's really, really trouble. I remember, I don't know who it was, but I feel like it's somebody that you know too, Elizabeth. Maybe not. It could be totally somebody else from a different state. But I had a friend who was going to do a movie with a friend of mine who's a rock star. And this guy who was doing the movie had planned to have this rock star guy stay in the guest room at somebody's house. Mm-hmm. And he did not tell the rock star. And he was really, really nervous that if he did, he'd drop out. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, when are you going to start shooting? He's like 6 weeks away. I said, all right, you have time right now to recast this part. Uh-huh. If you wait until the day before shooting and this person arrives on set and realizes they're staying in a guest room at somebody's house and they quit and you're supposed to film the next day, I would rather recast it now than on that day.
Or
just tell them.
Yeah.
Because maybe they're okay with it.
Yeah.
But if you hold it back, mm-hmm. or you know, keep it hidden, uh-huh. it's just not going to be helpful for anybody. So I always just say, be honest. I love, be kind, be compassionate. Treat everybody nicely.
I think communication and clear roles, like you cannot over communicate before production starts. So making sure that, especially if it's your first time, okay, these are the roles of producer and director, especially if you're doing a shoestring budget, you know, and you don't have a bunch of people from the industry who, you know, kind of zero in on their job and do it. If you're all kind of wearing multiple hats, make sure you all know what your multiple hats are, because there's nothing worse than like to be left holding the bag for being responsible for something you had no idea, you know, like that your crew there's no, even this, like all of a sudden you realize there's no lunch and you're like, well, I'm the director. Why would I think that there was supposed to, you know, I thought someone's bringing lunch to us. Okay. Well, did you know, make sure you cannot overplan it. You should plan for the breaks. If you want to keep people happy, keep them fed. Try not to and respect their time. You don't need 14, 16 hour days on set. You don't. You just need to be more efficient. Do not stress people out by underfeeding and overworking them. That's major advice. That's major advice.
Yeah, totally. I am so glad you said that, Elizabeth, because it's if everybody is well fed and they have had a good night's sleep, uh-huh. they're going to love showing up tomorrow.
Yeah.
And so what if you work an extra day or two?
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you add up all those little 2 hour pieces of every 14 hour day, mm-hmm. and you just add on a couple extra days and you never go over 12 hours.
Yeah.
People would like that better.
You're not going to get what you want. You're not going to get their best work. And can you imagine, like, put yourself in like a worst case scenario situation where, like, say an actress is doing, you know, her big moment, you know, she's having to like cry or, you know, or something traumatic's happening to her, or it's her big moment. And, you know, your DP is on his 14th or 15th hour and the focus puller is too. And they're like, you know, you're doing like a complicated, you know, dolly move, racked focus, you know, trying to follow someone, and they have to do it 14 times. I mean, people are going to walk off the set. It's not, and you are going to feel so uncomfortable. And you should, because that should never happen. That shot should not have been at midnight after so many hours of shooting and so on. So, and then it can really start to build. That's where you get that resentment. That's where you get the blow ups, you know, from people. So I'll do that.
Filmmaker Elizabeth Speer. Tune in next time for more Filmmaking Confidential. It is totally free to subscribe, and when you subscribe, you'll get upcoming new episodes automatically, and you'll have free access to all our past shows. The Filmmaking Confidential podcast is a production of Dakanga Audio and produced by myself and Ella Spencer. Our theme music is composed by Kevin Robles. For more of the Filmmaking Confidential podcast, head over to filmmakingconfidential.com. If you have a question about filmmaking you'd like answered on the podcast, send me an email using the contact form on the website. To learn more of my filmmaking secrets, be sure to pick up a copy of the book Filmmaking Confidential, available on Audible, paperback, and ebook, wherever books are sold. This is Steve Balderson. Thanks for listening and spreading the word. Until next time, keep making, keep doing, and keep going.